Good morning. My name is Daniel Ratzi. I'm working at Nibio in Norway. And the work I'm going to present today is actually synthesis of some aspects of two PhD that Ophelis Boudai and Simon Weldon, and it's done in cooperation with Peter Deutsch, University of Life Sciences, and also Samuel Abivan at the University of Zurich. As we do this biochar experiment, we want to put this biochar in the soil. This is some picture of the experiment we are conducting in Norway. There's basically three different aspects of the mitigation that we want to address. The first one is that we want to be sure that the biochar is stable, that actually is not going to release the CO2. And that's, of course, a very important question. It's a very important question if we want to get biochar approved as a carbon sequestration measure. The second aspect is we want to be sure that the biochar is not inducing a release of CO2 from the organic matter, a priming of the organic matter, but it could actually be a negative priming helping the storage. And the third effect is the N2O. We want to see the contribution of the biochar and if it can reduce N2O. I'm not addressing methane here, thinking that this is agricultural soil, drain agricultural soil. And all these aspects are mediated, of course, by microorganisms. And for this experiment, we need to screen biochar, and we know very well that two very important factors of biochar quality is the temperature of pyrolysis on the one hand and the feedstock. So my objective today is to give you a synopsis of some research we have done on estimating the impact of pyrolysis temperature on these three parameters. To do this, we produced a series of biochar from two different biomass, Miscanthus and corncob. We chose these two because they are C4 plants, and as most of you probably know, certainly know, the C4 plants have a different isotopic signature of 13C, stable isotope, so that when we produce this biochar and we incubate it in temperate soil, Norwegian soil, we can actually trace the fate of the constitutive carbon of this biochar. The biochar themselves are produced by three different methods. You have the slow pyrolysis that was done at NTNU in Norway, a range of temperature from 235 to 800 degrees, and then biochar produced by flash carbonization, approximate temperature of 600 degrees in Hawaii by the group of Michael Antal, and the biochar produced by HTC, hydrothermal carbonization, at a temperature, approximate temperature of 200 degrees at the Max Planck in Germany. So if we go straight to the results, the biochar properties, this is a very, I would say, standard graph for biochar. It's a function of the volatile matter and the temperature. And what you see is this very nice decrease in volatile matter with a high content of volatile matter, of course, the feedstock. It goes down for my HTC biochar and then a quick drop down around this temperature between 350 and 450 degrees. And you see here, these are actually the measured temperature, and you see this gap because that's important. Biochar production, pyrolysis, it's an exothermic process, so it's actually very difficult to produce biochar in this rich temperature. When you see them mentioned in the literature, often it's a target temperature and not an actual measured temperature. These are the actual measured temperature. So we looked at the properties. And one important property for biochar, of course, is the degree of aromaticity that is linked to the stability. That this is what we want, the stability. And the simplest of index for this that you find in the literature is this H2C atomic ratio versus the volatile matter. And you can see here this very nice relationship that we got from the feedstock to the HTC, so low temperature hydrothermal biochar and low temperature slow pyrolysis, and then this increasing ratio towards increasing theory stability. The second set of analysis we conducted is the BPCA biomarker for benzene polycarboxylic acid biomarkers. And this method consists of actually breaking, so this represents the sheet of biochar, this polyaromatic structure made of benzene unit. And what the method consists of is breaking these units, and then you fix carboxylic acids on the benzene structure, and depending on the number of carboxylic acids that you can fix, if you fix a 6 carboxylic, it means it's a unit that was in the middle of the sheet. If you fix 2 or 3, they were on the edge, and you can assess both the aromaticity, which I'm just going to talk about today, the total amount of these structures, and also the condensation degrees, how many of these structures were actually inside the ring. This is just a summary of many data on the aromaticity, but you see as the pyrolysis temperature increases, we get an increase in the total BPCA, and then we get this jump in temperature again, and then we see it's still increasing very much from, this is 370 to 450 degrees, and above 450 degrees, this is actually plateauing. We did different version of this. You can also do NMR, and of course we did NMR on all these biochar, also the FTIR and different indices. But basically the picture is extremely consistent between these different methods, and this is just a little table to show you this. If you look at the aromatic structure of the BPCA and correlation with, for example, aromatic evaluated by NMR technique, or the H2C ratio, you see extremely high correlation indices, which shows that all these techniques are nicely showing this peak, this increase in aromaticity between this 370 and 450 degrees. Now, of course, we want to link this to the actual stability. So these are small amounts, as you've seen, produced in the lab. At least some are produced in the lab and tested in the lab. So we did incubation, 1 year incubation with 1% biochar. And of course, tested with this natural abundance 13C stable isotope, the reason we chose this feedstock. These are the results. There's two series of graphs with the corn cob and the miscanthus are the two feedstock. And this is for the feedstock, the hydrothermal and the soil carbon decomposition curves. Interestingly enough, here you see that the hydrothermal produced about, decomposed at the rate of about 10% over the year, but plateaued faster than the slow pyrolysis. This is quite interesting. At the beginning, the slow pyrolysis is apparently very little labile carbon at low temperature, and it crossed this line. But for all the biochar slow pyrolysis that were produced above 370 degrees, basically there is a change 60 times smaller scale, between 0 to 0.6% per year. These curves are very similar, and indeed, if we looked at this, a summary, the half-life computed from modeling this data versus the highest treatment temperature, pyrolysis temperature, you see that there is a jump, again, between 250 here, 370, and immediately we actually reach maximum stability for these types of biochar, and a half-life over 100 years in our experiment, and no further gain, which tend to show in here that if we go above 370 degrees, we would actually reach immediately maximum stability. We also looked at the priming. That's a nice thing when we do this incubation with the 13C isotope method, is that we also get the decomposition of the organic matter. Looking at the priming of the organic matter, we looked at these two different ways. We compare the two feedstock, averaging all the biochar types. What we see is that priming was indeed positive, but it was transient. After 1 year, a one-year period, it basically went down to zero. Another way we averaged the different biochar, we looked at the different biochar type, the feedstock, the HTC, the slow pyrolysis, at high temperature and at low temperature. And what we see actually is that, so all were positive, all were transient, but in this period of time, in the middle of the year, it seemed that we'd actually a little more priming from actually our slow pyrolysis biochar. Now we also looked at the effect on the microbial community from these vials. We ran TRFLP and ARISA method, the TRFLP for the bacteria, ARISA for the fungi, and we did PCA analysis, in this case redundancy analysis, which is basically a PCA analysis. There's a two principal axis to see how these were grouping, and we see a very nice transition, for example, for the bacteria here, from you have the control, you have the feedstock here, you have the HTC, so low temperature, you have low temperature pyrolysis biochar, and here you have the high temperature, including this flash pyrolysis, 700, 800 degrees here, and a very nice transition. So it seemed that when we looked at the effect of the bacteria, actually the temperature of pyrolysis had a continuous effect on the population of the bacteria. And the same thing was true for the fungi, the Here the graph is reversed, but they don't really have a meaning because it's the two principal axes to show distribution. Again, a very nice transition. So the bacterial, both bacterial and fungal fungi communities responded, it seemed, nearly continuously to this increase in temperature. The last thing we did was looking at the denitrification kinetics. We have an incubation robot, and we incubated these samples. I will not go very much in detail in the methods here. And with the time, basically what we can do is measure the NO production, the N2O production, and the N2 production every 2-3 hours for a week period, a few days period. What you see, this is a bit small, but the control is in pink, and then the feedstock is in green, and what you see is that as the temperature increase, you have a reduced NO production, reduced N2O production, and actually with the feedstock, you have an increased production of N2O, but with the biochar and increasing temperature, you basically have very little N2O production when you do that. Another way to look at it, again, is to do one of these PCE analysis to see how these different sample groups, and this is done on our denitrification N2O curves. Again, we see a very nice transition from 105 being my feedstock to low temperature to the high temperature biochar, showing that this temperature is really a strong effect on the denitrification. And from this, we can actually make a graph of the dose of biochar with different dose versus the pyrolysis temperature. And I've represented two things here, the denitrification rate, the rate at which my N2 is being produced, and my denitrification ratio, which is the amount of N2O being produced over the N2O plus N2, so how much N2O is actually produced. And what we see is that as the pyrolysis temperature increased in this incubation, the denitrification rate was actually faster. We got a faster denitrification, but we got less N2O being produced. What we also see in both of these graphs is that this effect was quickly achieved, although this is in percentage, so this we use large amount of biochar on this. We see that we quickly achieve this effect. But the temperature effect is very clear, and the transition is quite short. And again, if you see this transition, it's around 400 degrees. But obviously the 370 degrees that I was talking about, this one still has quite a bit of N2O. It's actually producing more N2O than the control, and these guys are producing less N2O when you get towards 450 degrees biochar. So to sum up this research, what we have found is there is a sharp increase in aromaticity at 370 degrees, but this one is going on until 450 to reach a plateau. That the biochar resistance to microbial decomposition is greatly increasing at 370 degrees, but actually not further that we reach a plateau. That the priming of the soil organic matter was always positive, but it was transient. After 1 year, all of them, the priming had stopped for all the samples. That the shift in the microbial community appeared quite continuous and actually appeared greater even at 600 and 800 degrees, despite of the fact that the decomposition itself did not seem to reflect this. And there was a sharp change in denitrification kinetics around 400 degrees. So the general conclusion say that the fairly low pyrolysis temperature between 450 degrees is enough for biochar having maximum resistance to decomposition, having a large N2 effect, and at the same time having a lower impact on the microbial community. Thank you. That is a very good question. It was actually included in this study, and we had, if I can put it quickly, this one I think you're referring to. Well, this is the PCA, but we had a few samples actually that we tried the NaOH to compare the effect of biochar and the effect of NaOH. And what we found indeed is adding an amount of NaOH which would bring a liming effect comparable to that of the biochar, of the high temperature biochar, we measured both, trying to get the same pH change. By NaOH, we actually got a similar change in denitrification kinetics. This is a simplification, so it seems to show that pH is a big part of the story. When we look at all the results, it seems there is more to the story than only pH. But definitely pH appears an important element. Well, we did not really try the particle size, but the biochar, it's millimetric. It's about 1-2 millimeter size particle. It was from ground.
There's another question here? Okay, I'll take the last question.
Were you able to control for any effects of carbonates independent of pH changes to hydrolysis?
You mean for the incubation or for the pH or for? It could have an initial effect on the biochar, indeed. So we looked into this. It didn't seem that there was any important effect of the carbonate, but it has to be considered. And that's the reason actually I presented this. This flush incubation system, we developed a specific system, because not only this, but the fact that there is carbonate and that we worked with biochar that are high pH, it means actually that when you do incubation, the CO2 is sorbed in the water, and then it can really bias your incubation. So that's something we really tried to avoid by making a system where all the CO2 was actually measured. All the CO2 that was produced during these, and all the CO2, and all the delta of all the CO2 being produced is actually measured. If we want, we can discuss this for the method.
All right, thanks, Daniel.
Thank you.